All right, let's do it. There we go. It is podcasting time. Glenn Power is here. I'm here. It's the Powerworks Garage. We're talking cars. If you are listening to us on 100.3 in Dubai, the premier talk station, because we're on it.
Yeah.
Hello. If you're watching us on YouTube or Spotify, however you're getting this conversation, great to have you along. Don't forget to comment. Don't forget to like, subscribe, follow, share. We're looking forward to having you join us for the next, 50 minutes as we talk cars. Walking through the garage. It's looking sweet out there with the cars you've got in on the lifts. There's a pickup truck, the red whatever that is.
Oh, the Datsun, yeah.
Oh, man, that's old school.
Yeah, old school. Yeah, a couple of the guys that work out there used to work in Saudi and said they're quite common in Saudi.
The Datsun pickup trucks.
Yeah, but that's a right-hand drive one. And obviously a bit of a project for somebody. No reverse light on it.
Why would you don't reverse anyway?
Oh, no.
No going backwards in this thing.
He's got some nice lights in his tailgate. Well, it's not a tailgate. It's a solid bed. There's no way to open the back. It's just throw your goats in the top or whatever else you're putting in there. So you've got some nice lights in there, but they look nice, but there's no reverse light on them. So we've got to put one of those on for the RTA.
There you go.
Course, but whether the customer keeps that on after we fit it is up to them.
Exactly. Get it through the inspection and
do what you want after that.
But we do not advocate that, by the way. But people do that.
Yeah, we have some weird and wonderful requests for help. Yeah, we had a guy with a Golf whose suspension was put onto air suspension.
Okay,
and he's part of the whole sort of like stance scene, and he failed the test because the RTA were like, well, your suspension's modified and it's not allowed.
So they really are cracking down on this.
Yeah, but I think what the reason for failure was the fact that it was absolutely slammed onto its behind driving into the test bay. And I think it made it difficult to get it. So it's noticeable, right? I mean, cars have air suspension.
Yeah.
Cars do have air suspension. And if it's at a reasonable height and operates correctly and safely, I don't think you would have a problem. It's a little bit of a grey area, that one, but it failed. And the problem with that now is that has to be removed.
Right, because the problem is, I mean, enlighten us a little bit on when you take a vehicle into the RTA, they do the inspection, it fails, they log everything.
Yeah, that's it, it's logged, right? So if you take it and it fails, let's say it fails because your front left tyre is worn out. Yeah. When it goes back for the retest, you have so many days to take it back for a retest, 28 days, or 14 days for a retest, 14 days. So you take it back
and
for the retest.
And do you have to pay again for the retest?
70 dirhams. Okay. So it's like just under half of the full test price. But they, from experience, I don't know because I've never worked for them, but from experience, they tend to then only check the part that failed, make sure it's been rectified, and let it go. Now, I'd like to think that's not necessarily true, because if you failed because your front left tire was no good and you just take it outside, put the rear right tire on the front left and the front left back on the rear right, and then put it back in, and they might. So I'd like to think that they don't just check that, but from experience it seems that they do. So if you fail, for example, because you had this situation with paint, right?
Yeah, we did.
Now
The situation with the paint is the hood of the Wrangler, the clear coat had started to peel off.
Yeah.
And I mean, it didn't affect anything. There was really no big deal. I see lots of cars where this is happening, except when we got into the RTA, that was the mandate that paint not be peeling, and they rejected it. And they said, okay, the only way
we get that quite a lot.
Ah, okay.
And there's no way around that. And
so where do you send people to get this rectified?
I mean, so, yeah, we'll sort cosmetic stuff out for people. We'll do that for them. But what did used to happen was you'd go to the test center and you'd have a conversation with the person in charge or even the testing technician. And you'd say, look, I'll get it sorted. I really need you to pass this car. And more often than not, common sense would prevail.
Right.
They'd give you a note on the certificate. They say, get it sorted, and you get it sorted, but they pass you, so you're on the road, because that was just the way it was. It's not a safety thing with paint, but now
I don't think they do that anymore.
Now everything's on camera,
right?
And I was talking to
And not only is it on camera, well, it is on camera, but because it's on camera, they don't want you anywhere near your vehicle.
Exactly. You used to stand with them, right?
Yeah, I used to always do that. Yeah. Get out of here, dude.
So I was talking to a guy yesterday. We're having a chat about AI. So we're talking about the new Samsung AI where you talk on the phone. And I could be speaking to, your wife speaks French, right? She could speak French to me down the phone. I don't understand any French except for the bad words. But my phone would translate it in real time to English through my earpiece. So I would hear your wife speaking French as English through AI, which is great. That's an amazing use of AI. Yeah, fantastic.
Absolutely.
If you've got some trust issues, you've got to be careful. I mean,
absolutely.
Imagine, the UN conference and you have an American talking to someone that might not necessarily be from a friendly country and you've got to trust the AI to give them. But we've had translators for years, right? So AI, we're talking about it. And one of my thoughts that came up just from chatting was the RTA. Now, if you take your car for the RTA test, you'll see it gives you all the data at the top of the testing center name, the test lane, the bay number, the technician, the time the test starts and the time the test finishes. And some of them take 6-7 minutes, some of them less, right? And it's phenomenal because they're all in a fast test lane.
It always takes me I seem to always be there 40 minutes.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the actual duration of the physical inspection. Yeah.
6 minutes, I think that's their...
Yeah, so talking about them having cameras, and this became a problem where they'd say, look, we can't let you pass on paint because it's on the camera. And if we get checked, and rightly so.
And they will be checked. They're exactly quality
they
assurance.
Are checked. They are checked. I mean, it was only a few years ago that Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid just turned up at a load of government departments, what's happening here? Why are you on your phone?
No one was at work.
He can do that, and rightly so. So they don't want that kind of trouble. So my thoughts were, that's only one step away from that all being monitored by AI.
Yeah.
And then that is foolproof. You can't get around the system. And then I thought, you have facial recognition on a phone. We've had that for 10 plus years. Facial recognition's not new. To a consumer, it's not new. So the technology is very much not new. You could say, in theory, have a 2019 Audi A4, and you could have an image of an image that an AI program could look at, like facial recognition on a phone, of the underside of a car, of the underside of that vehicle, of an image of around the suspension and brake and wheel and tire area of each corner of the car, of the front, of the rear, of the top, of every side, of every single conceivable angle and inspection. Because an RTA test, like most tests, are only visual.
Right.
You've got brake force tests and things like that, but the rest is visual. You could have all of that with AI, so that then the vehicle just drives over the sensors, the cameras, whatever you want to have, and through.
You could almost be into a sensor bay.
It just drives over a camera, past a load of cameras, gets to the end, and then the AI program instantly, quicker than we can, will say there's a problem there. That's not normal. That's not normal. Tire tread too low. Brake pads too low. That's got a leak there. There's all these things that it shouldn't have. And I don't think that's that far away. And that is...
I would think that's already got to be here in the testing phase. AI is... The consumer rollout of AI has been incredibly fast. People like IBM, people always say, everyone's talking chat, GPT, et cetera, and et cetera. I said, hold on, IBM's been doing Watson for forever.
Mm.
Well, Watson's just an AI-powered tool that... could be manipulated to do exactly what you're talking about. Now, my suspicion is you've already solved the school bus, not people not stopping from the school bus in these podcasts. The RTA and others, I'm sure, are listening. You actually threw down the gauntlet and said you will help affix the stud traps on the buses. We might have just given the RTA yet another idea.
You see, the only problem with that, and this is a bit, this might sound Luddite to some.
This is the AI inspection of a car.
Yeah, the only issue with the AI inspection is that it's taking jobs away.
So this is my thing. By the way, Glenn Power here from PowerWorks Garage, if you're wondering who you're listening to on this podcast. I don't think so. The physical guy who's going to stand there and do the flashlight look, I think his job will evolve. And I think AI doesn't eliminate jobs. It allows us to find other places where that job needs to happen. Mm. And the challenge that we face at this moment is we're only looking at a very, when we look at the job situation, we look at it at a very surface level and not thinking about the larger context of, okay, where am I going to need to redeploy people and in what capacity? And that might mean, you know, these tools. So just a wish, a blue sky thinking, this tool might actually be able to be put into a system that exists on the back of a recovery truck.
Yeah.
So you got the guy with the flashlight who's underneath your car. Well, now the guy with the flashlight is retrained to be the guy who runs this thing off a recovery truck.
Mm.
And so it's just, okay, how are we going to redeploy people? Like, look, obviously some people will lose their job, but because they're not interested in being retrained. But I think it's a great opportunity moment. But in the short term, there is that.
It's just when it comes to things like safety, which is what the RTA test and we have the MOT in the UK test, it's basically a minimum level of maintenance to try and do the best that we can. It's no different to telling you to wear your seatbelt or wear a helmet on a bike. You know, it's no different to that. It's trying to do the best that we can from a regulatory standpoint to make sure people are driving safe vehicles.
This is where the AI, the limitation
the
of
AI is no gray. It's black and white.
It doesn't have the nuance.
Yeah.
And that's where you still need people, and you're going to need the person now to interpret the results and say, hold it. Oh, we got to think about this.
Yeah.
Is it really an issue or no, it's not.
Yeah.
And yes, you can do that with fewer people, but you're going to have the person monitoring it. And it's like the airport. You've got the person looking at the scanner, and then you've got three people who are doing the work that has to be done. Whereas at some point there was no one doing those things. So we're actually creating a little bit of work.
The other thing with that, because the other potential benefit, potential data privacy issue maybe, is that because it'll all be Internet of Things, it'll all be connected somewhere. I just as an example said, the car I gave was an Audi A4, right? So let's say 2019 Audi A4. So you could take the data from, there might be 10,000 of those on the road. You could take the data of all of those at their annual test at the same age.
Right.
And see, okay, they're all having issues with this component.
Yeah. That'd be amazing, actually. Yeah.
Then you've got a situation where the same AI that's doing that test, we've already spoke last week about ChatGPT going into some VW models and Skoda are doing it across the whole range. That's connected for that to say, look, it's possible that you need to get your front left outer CV boot checked because we've noticed that.
That would be kind of cool.
You know?
I mean, I think it also starts to worry people because it's...
Well, but, yeah. But it worries the manufacturer, if anyone, because when we worked at VW, a cardinal sin was to admit to a common issue.
Right.
Never admit to a common issue. Always. Oh, I've not seen that before.
Yeah. And so the car companies don't want that because it's kind of funny. Car companies are a lot like mobile phone companies and computer software designers in that, yes, they give you a final product, but it's never truly finished.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's right. It's not anymore, is it?
No.
They're not. You do a lot. You do the final testing.
It's the patches that come and this comes and that comes. And it's like, hold on. I don't want to. I want my thing to be absolutely 100%. Fixed and ready to go. We were talking about restaurants a little bit, and then they come, is everything okay? And I mean, most cases it's a courtesy thing. Maybe they haven't cooked your steak the way you want it, or something's a little bit cool. But for the most part, I would say maybe 5% of people have some issue with the food, but you expect the food to be cooked the way it is, and you're not sending everything back. There's not an endemic, oh, hold on a second, we forgot to put the salt on. Oh, hold on a second, I'm just going to put a little bit more sauce on. Oh, hold on a second. But that's really what it's like with our electronic stuff.
Yeah.
And cars too. They just don't really talk about it too much.
No, it is. And I think AI, it was surprising to me when we spoke about ChatGPT and VW last week, and I know there'll be certain limited functions and it'll be very much a gimmick to start with, just like the electronic handbrake was. But
I still don't like the electronic handbrake.
No. it'll go somewhere. And I was surprised because it opens a door and it could potentially be a problem for a manufacturer, because then everything is going to be available to everybody.
Yeah.
If you implement AI to vehicle inspection, which I don't see why that can't happen probably now,
yeah.
You know, with the appetite and a bit of investment, that could probably be implemented now.
I would imagine, as you said, with the data collection, that the RTA or anyone in any country who's doing car inspections like this wouldn't be using some version of AI to make sense of what they're seeing.
Because somebody could even retrospectively go over everything with AI now.
You just got to load it all in.
You see the...
And know what you're looking for. And so this is the other side. When we start talking AI and everyone's saying this, the ability to generate prompts is the key to AI.
Yeah, yeah, you've got to be able to manipulate it.
And understanding the order of words that you need to, subject, object, what order are you putting them? Because that affects the way the AI works.
Role playing with them.
Yeah.
As well.
So you know which degree suddenly today becomes very valuable?
Mm.
An English degree, an arts and science degree, a humanities degree.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyone who can think about word manipulation, and that's what they do in their studies. So all of these degrees, everyone say, why would you go take an English degree? Why'd you study English? Oh, I want to be a prompt generator.
Mm. No, no. That's
and suddenly
right.
those, because the people who aren't using ChatGPT to its most efficient manner are those who are not good at writing prompts.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, thinking about what they want to do.
You've got talking about, the way that you collect data. Now, from what we were mentioning with the RTA inspection, it's done by a human.
Yeah.
The inspection is visual by a human. The input from the inspection is by a human.
No.
So I could go around a vehicle and notice that there's a slight bit of abnormal wear on one of the tires, let's say. And then I go around in my set routine, which I do every single time, the same way on every vehicle. Something could happen. Phone might ring, somebody might fall down, someone might drop something might break, there might be a disaster. I get turned away from my work for whatever reason, right? It's a dynamic environment. I could do the rest of the inspection, remember everything else, and forget to put that tire down.
And everyone has had that situation happen.
I've done it.
On a weekly basis, we all have done this. Oh yeah, I forgot to do that. I got interrupted.
Or you've done your inspection. You take your paperwork over to... So this is how it was done with the MOTs in the UK when I was there. It's probably slightly different now, although I don't know that to be true. You do your inspection, and then you'll sit in front of a PC, and you'll input the data. You might look at your sheet and be like, I don't even remember writing that. What does that say? Because there's a big oily thumb mark on it, or, you've been under there and you've got it wet because it's the UK and everything's dripping wet through, and there's a hole through the sheet that you've made. So forget it. I'd not marked it down as dangerous, so forget it, right? So that happened. That can't happen with AI.
Yeah.
That can't happen. That won't happen with AI. But obviously you have to panic about the hack side of it. Of course, that's not great. You don't want that to happen.
If it's software, or even if it's hardware-based, there's always going to be someone who's going to open up that thing, figure out where I have to put a couple leads. I can bypass it onto my computer, download all this.
I just think that there's a lot to concern the average person like you and I about, but manufacturers aren't going to be happy. And if your job as a regulatory authority, so let's take the Ministry of Transport in the UK, the RTA here, let's say they implement AI. Let's say that they know that from their data, 80% of a particular make and model of vehicle has an issue with a brake pipe by 6 years old.
Yeah.
Are they not, as a regulatory authority, government regulatory authority, obliged to tell the public?
Absolutely.
So then that is not something the manufacturers want.
Mm.
because the manufacturers live in a little nice little bubble at the minute. Makes that's just how it is, just wear and tear. It's driver error, it's lack of maintenance. It is
right,
but that doesn't matter. It's a bit like you can have all the science in the world done in a lab, but if it's not real world, it's irrelevant. You can have people in a lab telling you that you'll get stronger by doing a certain type of exercise, but people that are actually doing that exercise will have a different opinion.
And so this becomes a problem again with all of these technologies we've got, from automobiles right through our phones. Is they're lab tested, all very rigorous, until it gets into the real world. And then, we didn't anticipate this variable.
Yeah.
We didn't see this happening.
AI, as I am very limited, I admit, but as I understand it, is pretty much, it's true, not true. It's black, it's white, it's up, it's down, it's left, it's right. It's not any kind of, maybe, you know, like, as we were started this conversation, you can have a bit of a conversation, chat with the person testing the vehicle and say, look, I brought this to you from a garage. We are going to fix that. We need to get this passed, please. You know, it's 5 o'clock, you're closing in 30 minutes. That doesn't happen anymore, but it used to. I remember my AAA days. Go to the test center at 4 o'clock on a Thursday afternoon. Like, we need to get this passed because you're closed now till Monday or whatever it was, Sunday. So, you know, these things have, it's like, but AI is not going to do that. AI is going to be completely non-discriminate. That is the fact. You have a worn tire that needs to fail. Your lights do not work. That needs to fail. And if it's a bulb that, like, me and DJ, I'll tell you, got Volkswagen Golfs, Mark IVs, the left-hand side and brake lights used to fail all the time. The bulbs used to go more than any other. I don't ever know why. It was always the left-hand side. Always the left-hand side. Come in for a fault.
Where's the power supply come in from? Is there more?
Always the left-hand side. Maybe there's a longer length or shorter length of wire, maybe, whatever. It was always the left-hand side. Bulbs would fail. Now, if that gets picked up on MOT test by AI, they're going to flag that. That isn't that much of a problem. But as a regulatory authority, especially in the UK, where it's dark, raining, windy, snowing, icy all the time,
you need that left side working.
The lights need to work. So you have to put that forward as the government, who you're claiming that you need to charge £50 every year to customers, to road users, on top of road tax, insurance, petrol tax, petrol itself, everything else. You're justifying that £50 charge.
People now, their eyes have just rolled in the back of their head just to stop reminding me.
Yeah, no, exactly right. But you're justifying that £50 charge on the basis of, and quite rightly so, that it's safe.
Yeah.
Well, okay, but it doesn't stop at just checking, surely. If you've got the tools, which we have got now, to say every single one of these vehicles that we've tested, 70% of them have had this failure. And then where do you draw the line, right? Is it 10% that you need to tell people about? Is it 70%? Is it 50-50? When do you say that that needs to become a problem?
Yeah.
And for me, that's both a very valuable tool, but also it's a little bit like, you know, the old superhero thing of, you know, with great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah.
That could easily be hacked and could easily be, you know, but who what do you do with that data? The manufacturers don't want people to have it. They'd like it.
Yeah,
they'd love
it. Yeah, they love it.
So then do you have manufacturer specific tests? There's a reason that we don't have that.
Well, when as the manufacturer, when I bring my vehicle into GM or Volkswagen or Skoda or, you know, wherever, and they plug in the computer, does it suck out all of that information and share it with the manufacturer?
Electrical stuff now, not always shared to the manufacturer. In the dealer, it does. It goes to the factory.
Yeah.
But not so when I
mean, not with you guys, but if I'm going to the branded repair shop.
To the retailer,
yeah. So they at least are getting some.
Because they get a lot of electrical data. And it was
because they force you to come for...
Yeah. You've got a set time that you have to go over warrant.
And that becomes the issue.
You don't have that in most parts of the world.
Right.
You don't have to go to the dealer for warranty. You have to go for the warranty. Massive mosquito. You have to go for the warranty repairs.
Yeah.
But you don't have to go for the servicing.
Ah, okay. Well, I was just thinking, once I'm out of warranty, but how many people still go to the dealer to get their vehicles fixed? I would imagine not.
Well, it's more than you might think.
I would think people run as fast as they can for somewhere that
Now, obviously,
got more flexibility.
Other parts of the world, don't have monopolies on them, right? Mm. So you have got options and choice. So yeah. if you don't like the dealer down the road, you can go to the one in the next town. That doesn't happen here. If you don't like the one down the road, it's the same one in the next town.
Different people, same wrapper.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So, you know, you don't always get it.
So we're back to the same conundrum with AI as we see it with automobiles as everywhere, is there's a lot more questions than answers.
Mm.
And the folks who create the policy, unfortunately, those policies get created slowly.
Mm.
And so we're living in the Wild West still.
Technology is moving a lot faster than social evolution. So
it's going to rely on our morality to see it through until guard barriers are put up.
Yeah.
Whatever sort of guard barrier that will be, whether it's a policy barrier or whatever.
When I started doing motorsport at college, we got a book called Hillier's Fundamentals of Motor Vehicle Engineering. And my tutor at the time, Graham Kemp, his name, he was a former UK Army tank commander, and he was a great guy. And he said to us, you need to keep that book and treat it as your Bible. You know, that's the book that will get you through this training. You need to read that book. He said it's kind of laid out that you can read it front to back and it'll make sense. Read it. And that was the, I think it said fourth edition. So we've got a guy coming here to do work experience, and I recommended that he bought a new one, and it's the sixth edition. And in the back, the last section, I need to go and check mine when I get back to the UK next. There's a section 7 is future tech.
Uh-huh.
I'm pretty sure that future tech in my fourth edition from over 20 years ago and future tech in this now sixth or whatever edition it is are pretty much the same. Oh, talking about hybrids. I mean, you've got to remember that early 2000s we had the Prius.
The Prius has been around so
shocking.
Long.
and then it's...
And it looks the same.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's all of this stuff where I don't think it's changed that much. I'd be interested to see what the seventh edition says, because I think it's going to be massively, massively different.
And it's got to be.
Yeah. The EV experiment, as I think of it now, is probably going to be, it's not ideal. We've moved on. Hydrogen's the way, whatever it might be. But I think that the seventh edition is going to be very, very interesting, because you've got the whole self-drive, autonomous, flying, you know, you've got, you know, Las Vegas, you can do the whole of Las Vegas underground pretty much now. If you've got a Tesla, you can use the Tesla tunnels, right?
Yeah.
So all of this is new tech, and where AI will take that is what interests me. If you were to get an AI program in a vehicle manufacturer and say, look, tell me how and what and where and when and why our next vehicle should be, how would an AI with the whole data of positives, negatives and everything to small passenger transport, what would an AI program suggest and how would it produce and what would it produce? And I don't know that it would make an EV.
Interesting.
I don't think it would. When you have to import all of the data and everything else that you have to do. I think there was a stat where, you know, we're shipping all the raw materials back and forth across the world, then shipping them back and forth to make what we're making with them and all this stuff. I think it's something like 6 or 7 of the biggest container ships put out more carbon pollution than the whole of the UK's road use.
I'd like to see that stat,
right? I think these kind of things, is AI going to say that that car transport is? Surely an AI would say no. Sure, an AI would surely say, well, work from home where you can.
Yeah,
you know, public transport, because again, there's no real world exposure to an AI.
I guess
AI's never waited in a bus stop in July.
Although the challenge begins with AI on who has taught it and which resources is it using to base its thoughts off.
Yeah.
So it's I want to jump back for a second to electric vehicles. You brought it up, not me. And it's interesting, because when I think about vehicles in general, I always think of the, you know, the big three, the big four, maybe it's the big five now, you know, Tesla, Ford, GM, maybe Renault, you know, those folks, Peugeot, you know, there's some folks coming out of Vietnam and others, and vehicles I've never heard of, names of companies I've never heard of.
Yeah.
And they're making a play on the big players. And the one that I thought was interesting was VinFast. And VinFast, a Vietnamese company, wants to take on Rivian, which we don't see. Do we see many Rivians here?
No.
I saw a couple of Rivians when I was back in Canada on the holidays, a Rivian pickup truck. Mm. Wow. Mm. It was pretty spectacular, yeah. Actually. And then, of course, Ford, number one selling pickup truck in North America, the F-150. And then you've got the electric version. So this Vietnamese company, the VF Wild, so it sounds good, but it's got the funny name if you just go with the full thing. Actually, circling right back to the start of this program, I'm going to have to take a picture of it. The Datsun that's up on the lift from 19, whatever that thing is.
Well, yeah.
This VinFast looks the same. It's an electric vehicle.
Yeah, they've just modernized the classic.
Yeah, that's all they've done. They've gone back to, hey, Datsun had this sorted. Let's make it new and make it electric.
It's not really a surprise that I always said from the start, you know, all these classic models that are dying out, Beetles and Golf even potentially, and all these things, that they should be kept alive as an EV, because you know, who wouldn't buy an electric 2CV? Everybody, they'd be sold out, there'd be waiting lists for them. Who wouldn't buy an electric classic Beetle? They'd be sold out. Electric E-Type Jaguar, there'd be you know, these things are, for me, what that tech would be best used as.
I wonder, with all the new electric vehicles coming out, if it isn't creating that tidal wave again, because you don't, the tidal wave of innovation in automobiles and the way they look and people getting in and trying to do their things, because you don't have to go buy the engines from anyone. You got to have batteries, you got to have your electric motors, but that changes, you know, you need your chassis, but it changes the price of entry into the market in a sense. And I just think we're seeing so many new players out there.
Yeah.
It's kind of, in a sense, it's kind of fun.
Yeah. I mean, I was bemoaning the names of some of these things last week, right?
Well, that's it. You sent me a reel and you were showing me your computer that does the diagnostics, and it's got new names of vehicles and manufacturers, and the names are horrible. they I'm sure they work in their language they're coming from, especially a lot of the Chinese ones. I know they work in that area, but when you translate it and try and get it into English, it doesn't work.
No.
But I also thought, wow, it's pretty wild that you've updated your diagnostic tool and it has all these new manufacturers now in it.
Yeah, well, that's constantly connected to the internet. We do a lot of stuff using the internet because we have to code, we have to do backups and stuff like that. And so when it updates to software updates for existing, but also new ones that come online that we can now work on. I mean, I've never seen a Joylong.
Yeah.
Thankfully, just, you know.
it's a funny name. I think just some of the naming, it's like, come on, you need, again, now you, AI's not doing it, clearly.
No.
You need, that's where you need a human to come in, find that English language major, and let's start naming some vehicles better.
Yeah.
I mean, keep the name whatever it is, if it's in China, Vietnam, Korea, fine, keep the Korean names in Korea. And but when you take it out into an English market or a Spanish market or a French market or, you know, wherever, think about how the names are going to play out. And I think that's really important.
Yeah, you couldn't have a Toyota MR2 in France because MR2.
Yeah.
They didn't sell it because of that reason, right?
Yeah.
So you couldn't have that, and that's kind of been lost because, I mean, Joylong doesn't offend anyone, really, but it's not.
It's just an odd name. It's just an odd name.
Yeah. And, but then again, do these manufacturers, you know, when these manufacturers are making these cars, are they expecting to be making them in 50 years' time? I don't think so. I don't think so at all. I think it's just one of those. We'll start doing this and
see where it goes.
It's the whole sort of Amazon, Shopify, drop shipping attitude of, well, this will make me some money for now.
On a side note about this, Amazon and stuff, and I am not an online shop. You might not believe this, but I really don't like shopping online. I don't like ordering stuff online, and it's got nothing to do with security, etc. I just like to go and see and feel the products. But increasingly, I'm finding it harder and harder not to do that. I needed some 20-amp fuses.
Mm.
I went to my hardware store. I went here. I went there. I got onto Amazon. They arrived in an hour.
Nice.
And I'm going, well, the next day, actually. But still, I got 10. I got them at a decent price.
Yeah.
I went to my local. I couldn't find them.
Yeah.
I've bought shaving cream.
Yeah.
I've gone to the store. Oh, we don't have any. Just go and get it on Amazon. They're directing me to Amazon.
That being said, we had an issue with blade fuses, actually. We bought some from Amazon, but the actual blades, the pins that went into the fuse box were not thick enough.
Right.
So the rating of them was, say, 15 amps, whatever it was, but the actually thickness of the blade wasn't
right
thick enough, so it wasn't making the right contact.
Right, that's a problem.
Yeah, big issue that.
And I haven't tested out these fuses, but they do look a little smaller, so I'm not sure.
You just have to make sure the thickness of the metal pins is right.
So I'm hoping I'm going to have to test it out and see if it works, but we'll see.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff Bezos.
Yeah, it's like, oh, man. This is also, I wanted to just take a few minutes to pick your brain, and I know there's a lot of folks listening right now who are thinking, man, I need to get a new car, or not a new car, I just need to change up my car. And the used car market everywhere is absolutely on fire, continues to be. But as people don't necessarily have the intuitive skills to fix their own cars, they also don't necessarily have the intuitive skills to take a look at a used car and beyond the, you know, the smell on the inside and the wear and tear on the upholstery, you know, what condition is this car in? I'm not so sure people are really tuned in on things. I wonder if we could take a few minutes from your perspective as, you know, a person running a garage, as a mechanic. What do we need to look for when we, you know, we see the Kijiji ad, we see whatever it is, you know, the Dubizzle ad, and then I finally see the vehicle. What do I need to do as a walk around to at least be able to make the start of a decision to decide if I'm going to send it to get inspected?
Well, where possible, before you even go to see the car, you need to take the details from the listing, contact the seller and ask for, if it's not already on there, the chassis number of it, and then using your local database, check the service and accident history. Service history might be more difficult because of data protection.
Mm.
So you can't just go and get the service history of any old car. Yeah, that's only available to the owner, registered owner, and you'll need to prove that you're a registered owner. But the accident history should be on a public database. So any accidents that have caused police to be informed or have insurance reports that, you know,
you can get all that from the VIN number.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
right off the bat, make sure that it hasn't been a scrapped car. It's not been in.
Yeah, exactly. A car having an accident is not a problem. Going around with one of these paint thickness checkers. So what? The car's had paint.
Are you taking a jab at Colin Thomas?
No, but my point still
stands.
He
loves his paint thickness tester.
If I understand why people would say that a car that's never had paint is more valuable, potentially, than a car that has. But a car is a car, so you use it. And you take it to the mall and someone opens their door onto you and you think, I don't like that and I'm going to get it painted.
Yeah.
I've got a van out there. The first time that gets marked, I'm going to get it painted. So someone's then going to go around it and say, this car, that van's probably going to be the one of the most best looked after vans in the country. But, oh, it's got paint on it, so that's no good. I'm like, oh, do whatever then. But garages are here. Body shops are here to fix damaged vehicles. That's our job and that's what we're for. It's no different to painting the walls in your house or fixing the AC compressor of your house or whatever. It's the same thing. People are there that can do those jobs because they're needed. But if you ask the seller, has there been any accidents on this vehicle, and they say no, and then you check and there have been, Walk away. Why do business with somebody who's going to lie right about that? And so why are they lying? But also, who cares? Just walk away from them. They're just a liar.
There we go. So that's
the first thing.
No matter how good the vehicle is, walk away.
Yeah, if they're lying about an accident, there's a reason for that. If they can't give you the full service history of the vehicle, you don't need to know how much they've spent. You just need to know as and when it's been into service and preferably where. Walk away. Modern vehicles now with aluminium components for suspension, with alloy components for the engines, they have very, very low tolerance to abuse. You need to make sure they're serviced on time. And if they haven't been, walk away. Right. Don't waste your time.
There you go.
And then the third thing to do is get it inspected by an independent workshop. So if you can ask the seller, whether it's private or whether it's a dealership, can I take it to my carriage of choice for an inspection? Again, if they say no, why?
Yeah.
Why? What are they hiding? If they want to do a deal, they're going to let the car go for an inspection for a few hours.
Yeah.
So again, walk away. These three things are non-negotiable for me. If you can't get a clean accident history or an accident history that is backed up by what the current owner is saying, if you can't get a service history that's complete, and if you can't get an inspection in that order, that's the order of doing things. If any of those come up with no's, just walk away. And then at that point, you get an inspection done in the garage and speak to them.
On average, like, what do you guys charge to do an inspection?
So we charge 300 dirhams. There are a few sort of friends and family rates and Facebook discounts for certain groups. But our charge is 300 dirhams. Okay. Yeah. If it's something like, we've had a couple lately, if it's something like a Ferrari or when it's an Aston Martin or things like that are much more valuable vehicles that require a little bit more risk from our part, we charge more.
Okay.
But
that's fair play. What's involved in the inspection?
So the first thing we would do is obviously visual inspection. Mm. So we will visually inspect the mechanics, the bodywork, all of the same stuff that we've just been talking about with the annual inspection from the RTA, slightly more in depth. We'll take, a look with the diagnostic tool. If there's any fault stored in any of the fault memories, we'll try and ratify the mileage. So what does it say on the display? What does it say in the engine control, the transmission control and the dashboard? What do they say relative to what it says on the display? Has the car been clocked? And
do you see that often?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And a lot of times it's, unfortunately, you have to say a lot of the times it's been done sort of dishonestly. Mm. There are times that it has to be done. So you might have a situation where you're involved in an accident or something goes wrong and your dashboard is affected by that. Well, dashboards now are so expensive that you might not be able to afford, nor because of the production issues today, be able to source a new one.
Mm.
So we put secondhand ones in. Okay. But if I take the dashboard out of your Wrangler that's got 400,000 kilometers on it and put it into a Wrangler that had done 800,000 kilometers, I haven't done that to dishonestly show that the car's done less kilometers than it has, but I've had to do it because there was a fault. Now, that invoice and paperwork would be kept with the vehicle, and it has to be for the RTA. The annual inspection should pick up that, hang on, last year you'd done 150,000 kilometres and now you're here a year later and you've done 20.
Mm.
Yeah, and it fails automatically. But if you have an invoice to say, look, no, actually I put a second-hand display on it because I had a fault with mine, then they'll adjust that.
Okay.
So, these are the things that we check. We check if there's any signs of accident repair. So, for example, the bolts that hold door hinges on, right? They are painted. So if they've been removed or refitted, the paint will have come off. Where there's tools have been on, the tooling marks will be obvious, so we can see. And then we can say, well, does this line up with an accident report and does this line up with what the current owner's saying? Now, granted, if the car's 5, 6, 7-plus years old, it might be onto its third or fourth owner. So the current owner might have had it for 6 months and be, there could have been a teacher that's been here on a short-term contract and doesn't want to stay or whatever it might be. So they don't know, but we can still check and we can go through everything there. And then again, we'll give another final prompt on, have you checked on the vehicle database? Have you checked the service history? We can't and won't do those things, but we can ask you to do them.
Yeah.
and then we'll go through what it's going to cost you to own this car on average. What is it going to cost?
What the yearly maintenance is likely to be.
What can you expect? How many kilometers are you going to do? How are you going to use the car? So if someone that comes to me with, let's say, a Land Rover Discovery and says, I'm going to drive this car every single day to Abu Dhabi and back, I'm going to say, you're going to love this car. Yeah, absolutely love this car. You're going to be in for a service quite regularly every couple of months because of the every 10K is what we'd recommend. But you're not going to have any problems with it. You're going to absolutely love it. But someone that says to me, I'm going to buy a Land Rover Discovery and I'm going to take my kid to school every day, it's only going to do a few kilometers a day, it's going to be great for it. In time, I'm saying, you're going to hate this car. You're going to hate it because you're going to be up and down. You're going to be up and down the road. It's barely going to get to temperature. You're going to have the suspension barely used. It's just not going to be happy, not being used like that. So, you know, these are two different things. That's going to cost you more in maintenance than it is if you're using it. And it could be vice versa for a different type of car, right? So these are the reasons that I had a conversation with a customer on the phone. They called me and said, I've got an Audi Q5 and I understand there are problems with Audis with transmissions. And I just sort of said, look, I'm going to have to stop you there because there aren't. There are problems with Audis with transmissions, not because they're Audi transmissions. There are problems with Audis and transmissions because they require maintenance that often people don't want to pay for.
Right.
An Audi is an expensive car.
Mm.
Unfortunately, because of where we are and because of the ease of credit, people buy them on credit.
Mm.
That credit payment every single month tends to be the maximum that person can afford. That person then has their first service at, let's say the car was a used car and they've bought it on credit, and their first service is at 60,000 kilometers, and they say, yeah, you need your gearbox service doing, that's 3,000 dirhams. I can't do that. It's driving fine, I'll leave it. I can't afford it. I've got a 5,000 dirham payment for the car. I've got my rent. I've got this, and this. So they don't do the 3,000 gearbox service.
Oh, boy. 20,000,
30,000 kilometers later, it's a 25,000, 30,000 dirham gearbox overhaul or replacement.
Yeah.
Oh, bloody Audis, you know. That's how it is. Same with Jaguar Land Rover. Not someone, you know, Jaguar Land Rover have the same issue. People buy them on credit, max their bank balance out, and don't have the money to do the maintenance on them. So then they miss things that they think they can get away with, and they get the wrong advice from people.
Yeah. So it's really important you understand what it's going to cost to own it. And we had a crazy number a couple of weeks ago. It was like $12,000. To really run a vehicle in a year. And that might have included fuel and things.
Yeah, I think that's quite.
But that's, you know, when you think about a salary and then you think, I got to have an extra 12 G's sitting around, that's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
It makes you think twice.
Yeah. You've really got to know, like, you know, if anyone wants to know what it costs to own your model Wrangler, you know.
I know.
Right? You've had two pretty much exactly the same age. Same engine, pretty much the same everything apart from, you know, number of doors. You know what it costs, right?
Yeah.
And that's a valuable resource to somebody if they're willing to tap into it. And we try to offer it to people. Now, look, I get it, you know, especially for someone that's moved to the UAE from a country where fuel and tax is high. They might think, oh, definitely I'm buying a Range Rover, supercharged. Yeah. Why not? Or I'm going to buy that XFR Jaguar, or I'm going to buy that Audi RS6, or, you know, well, I can get it on credit, amazing. But that 6,000, 7,000 dirham car payment is a chunk of your salary every month. Yeah. Then you've got to put the fuel in it. Then you've got school fees, then you've got rent, then you've got everything else that comes along with it.
Yeah.
Before you know it,
you're wishing you'd bought a Vigo.
Well, that's right. Your service is due, and it's like, oh, I can't really afford to do the S-tronic service. I ain't got 3K now, and yeah. Or I could have done that, but it needs brakes. I'm going to have to do the brakes, and they're 4K. Yeah. You know, you try and do brakes on an RS6.
Oh, I can only imagine.
Yeah. So, you know, you've got a massive pot of money that needs, you know, you never know when you have a problem with a car coming, but people make it worse by not doing the right maintenance. And that's why, you know, that was on that first list that we started talking about. If you can't get a full service history on the car, don't buy it.
Don't buy it. Because inevitably shortcuts have been made and something is ready to go or has gone and rectified, and they're getting rid of it before it goes again.
Yeah.
And it's going to fail with you.
If someone gives you 20 pieces of paper that says every 3,000 kilometers had oil changed at Enoch, great. That's great.
Yeah.
That's not to be, the value of that cannot be understated genuinely. But you also need to know that it's had the time-dependent stuff done as well that needs to be done on time, all the time. Has it had the spark plugs changed regularly? I can tell you now that if it's a 5.4 Ford and the plugs haven't been changed on time, one or more of those is going to break in the head when I try and take them out.
Oh.
And you've got to change your head gasket. And I'm not talking, oh, we've had that a couple of times. I'm talking every single time.
Oh, man.
Because they just seize into the block, into the head. These things have to be done.
Yeah.
So if they aren't done, it's not to say, of course, we're not trying to talk people out of buying cars.
No, no.
But what I don't want is I don't want someone that we're having a friendly conversation with trying to do them a favor by checking them a car that they're not buying a lemon.
Yeah.
And then 6 weeks later, they're in the garage and I've got to give them a 20K bill.
Yeah, exactly. So do your homework up front, get that car inspected, have the conversation, spend the 300 or plus dirhams. I mean, different garages are going to have different prices. If someone's doing it for like dirt cheap, be questioning that because it's time. You've got, I mean, it's not like it's just 5 minutes, you're in and out.
Try and get the inspections done off site. Don't try and get them done at the house of the seller or in the showroom. You know, any car showroom that will not let the car go for an inspection, do not deal with them. I'm sorry, they've definitely got a recovery truck that they use to bring the cars to and from the RTA.
Yeah,
they've definitely got a recovery truck that they bring the cars to and from auctions and when they buy them from people. They can get that car to a garage within that town or city very, very quickly and cheaply. If they can't do that for you, walk away.
There you go. Solid advice from Glenn Power, Powerworks Garage. That's where we are. This is the Powerworks Podcast, and we're done for now. We're going to do it all again really soon. Thanks to everyone who's tuning in, 100.3 here in Dubai. That's talk, sport, and more. Thank you very much for listening to us. Those of you who are following us on YouTube or Spotify or however you're getting this podcast, thank you very much. We really appreciate it. And we look forward to chatting to you again real soon. I'm James Pikeway. He is
Glenn Power.
And we'll do it all again, like I said, really, really soon. Talk to you.